Today, we see Bodhidharma. We will explore. See, we're seeing how Bodhidharma, moved from China, from India into China. And with Bodhidharma, I have to say this. You all are aware that there are some marvelous, marvelous koans, and I will start with one of the koans. But there is a koan that you see, those of you who are doing Zen practice, and you see it in the 200 miscellaneous koans. And these miscellaneous koans that we were working with were the ones that that Kori Roshi had put together. There were some modifications. Roshi had made a few adjustments, trying to accommodate more the Western practitioner. But essentially the same thing. This koan, what is the meaning of Bodhidharma coming from the West? This was one of the, and I it's funny, it's sort of like when I talk about the kids that I used to teach up at the school. They were in the severely disabled, violent teenage boys. And I'd always say, and one of the kids would come up to my memory and I'd say, well, this is my favorite kid. Then another one would come and say, oh, and this was my favorite kid. And Soko said, you know, you ought to just accept the fact that they're all your favorite kids. And see, I still, after all of those years, I still have my pictures of them up on my counter. So the koans are sort of the same way for me. What's the meaning of Bodhidharma coming from the West? This was a particularly important koan in my own practice. Because to truly see this koan, not to intellectually arrive at a conclusion, but to see what is the meaning of Bodhidharma coming from the West. This had an impact on me. It was what I call a turning. Now, I can't explain anything more to you than that because it did change. It did change the way I functioned. Perhaps not in terribly overt way that other people could have judged. And that's not so important. Because it's where I live as I am. How I begin to experience the reality of the universe that I inhabit. What's the meaning of Bodhidharma coming, from the West? One of the other great koans that perhaps at some other point we'll bring these in and start to look at them. And we'll join the Lankavatara again. I've done some talks on it, and somebody had asked me, I forget who it was, if I would start to bring up some of Roshi's teachings, and I'm going to do that too. Somehow or another, I was just reading one of them this morning, and it was nice. I've never listened to the tapes. I simply, somehow or another, have not had any real interest in it. But I will pull out a few of the things that Roshi had talked about, and again to sort of reinforce for all of us what this marvelous Dharma is. Now, in this particular koan, or in one of the other koans that is of extreme importance, is when Bodhidharma met Emperor Wu. And I talked with Roshi on this, and the translators have missed. They didn't see the koan. They didn't grasp the koan. Because when Bodhidharma confronts Emperor Wu, and Emperor Wu asks him about all of these meritorious things that he has done. He's built temples. He expounds the sutras, the dharmas. He ordained. And he said, what does all of this meritorious behavior, garner for me? And Bodhidharma says, vast emptiness, no holiness. Vast emptiness, no holiness. And he says, who stands before me who says that all of these wonderful deeds that I have done don't amount to anything? Well, they cultivate good, in a relative world. In the world of samsara, doing good is better than doing bad. But as far as this absolute, this absolute expression, this absolute experience, of the enlightened being, these kinds of things, only have, a modest impact. A modest impact. Because so long as the separation exists, there will be, problems. Gunabhadra, we talked about Thursday night. Remember, that's what he talked about. So long, see, as you are caught in the dualistic mind, doing good will bring about evil. See, doing good, because it is still driven behind the separation, ego. See, anything that you do from that perspective will bring about some kinds of problems. Now, I have bored you to death with my own experiences, but I can only talk about my own experiences. I can only tell you about my practice. Anything else, see, that I bring up, see, you read it for yourself. Or go to the universities and enroll in the religious courses if you want an exercise in the intellect. See? But here I try to tell you about living Dharma. I love little Soko. See, I love her dearly, and I'm wanting to do good for her. And I always come up with all of these amazing ways that I can do good for her. See, and it always causes a problem. 99 times out of 100, she has no interest in the good that I think she should be interested in. And then I try to impose my good on her. I've caused evil already. And if you don't see this in yourself, you're totally delusional. You're not at all hearing Roshi's first admonition, see, of no self-deception. How many times even here, see, do you want to impose what's good for the center? See, if it was only, I've had people, if we could only do it this way, see, any time, and this was Gunabhadra, see, any imposition, see, of self causes trouble. Roshi would say it another way. He'd say, the most benign mind, the most brilliant and benign mind will always cause trouble. Egocentric. Slowly, a person like myself takes a long time, see, to cultivate this. I began to see what I was doing. And the funny part about it is, if I function from a place of great stillness, and what did Gunabhadra say was the most important thing? It's not cultivating ritual, following dogma, see, performing service. He said, that's a cultivation, a practice. See, that's not much. And unfortunately, that's probably what goes on. See, we take on pretty feathers. I've noticed all of my brothers and sisters have the most amazing acacias. Thousands of dollars to wear those acacias. See, stunning to my mind. Stunning to my mind. See, any affectation like that means that you're bankrupt. See, that you know no Dharma. See, most amazing thing about this Dharma, see, is it is ordinary. It is ordinary. Gunabhadra was saying, see, rather than cultivating, see, and by the way, if you want to know what that looks like, and again, this is an unfair criticism, but that's where I'm at. You could go see what the amazing Sojiji, or you could go down to Zen Shuji, and you can look at the elaborate stage and the theater. See, that's cultivating practice. See, and is that better than doing evil? Yes. See, it's better to do that because that at least is a pointing finger saying someplace in all of this you might be able to find the living Dharma. And Gunabhadra said, what is it that you should be doing? Cultivating the pacification of the mind. That's the way it's translated. Pacification. I joked with a little bit with Shindo. Some of you may or may not have followed it. Those of you who have looked at some of Tom Campbell's stuff, he'll tell you, using scientific terms, what we're trying to move from high entropy into low entropy. Do you know what low entropy is? Entropy. Confusion. Chaos. High. Low entropy. just here. So he uses those modern, technical, scientific terms to say the same thing. Here, we're trying to cultivate low entropy, or samadhi, a state of non-distracted awareness. That's the pacification of the mind. If you're not cultivating that, no matter how much ritual you involve yourself in, you're not practicing Buddha Dharma. See, you're still playing in the realm of samsara with your posturing, see, and ultimately causing pain and suffering. So the meditation master, interesting, meditation master, Bodhidharma, who took it up after Gunabhadra, see, and again, I'm sorry because I really have a hard time seeing. Intent on clarifying the great vehicle, he traveled by sea to China. And it was during this time, he had only two monks. See, we did wonderful this summer. See, was almost every morning was the perimeter was filled and often a ryoban. And during the middle of the day, often had this many sitting. Was the richest training period. Those of you who weren't able to participate, see, I really, really feel sorry for you. And I probably shouldn't say that, but I do. Because you really cheated yourself, see, of a terribly rich experience. If you were here for the Shuso Hosen and you went, then you know that this was the best that we've had. See, next summer will even be better. It's an amazing thing, the progression that we have watched. See, the Shusos show maturity. See, and does that mean that, oh my God, he's getting ahead of me? No. This is the mandala, see, of the hazy moon. And within this mandala, if you see it, this is your karma. This is your Buddha mind. And where you sit within this mandala is your karma. See, and we'll see how Bodhidharma addresses this. But the whole point to the practice, see, is to pacify the mind. See, from a state of high agitation to a state of tranquil stillness. During this time, he had only two monks, Dao Yu and Weka. We know Weka. This is the successor, see, that we are most familiar with. They served him for 5 years before he instructed them in the four practices. He said, now, again, pay close attention. 5 years before he instructed them in the four practices. What were they doing in that period of time? See, they were practicing Zazen. And we'll see how Bodhidharma teaches. See, and see if it has application to where we are. He said to Weka, there is the Lankavatara Sutra, and if you practice according to it, you will eventually be liberated. This is the great vehicle teaching for pacifying the mind. Let there be no error. Pacifying the mind. See, there is no issue of problem here. Don't seek. Bodhidharma sat facing the wall. The second patriarch stood in the snow. He cut off his arm and presented it to Bodhisattva, saying, my mind has no peace as yet. I beg you, Master, please pacify my mind. Bring me your mind here, and I will purify it for you, replied Bodhidharma. I have searched for my mind, and I cannot take hold of it, said the second patriarch. Now your mind is pacified, said Bodhidharma. Let's look quickly at this. See, please, please put my mind at ease. Some of you, when you come into the Doksan room, oh, I'm going crazy. Please, please put my mind at ease. Say, well, bring your mind here. See, what's the problem? See, right there where you're centered, where you're going crazy. See, that's the cloud. See, and you're totally responsible for that cloud. That's the cloud covering the sun, see, of the great enlightenment. What is the enlightened mind? This. Now, if we just see this, this is beginning to see mirror samadhi. But this, see, if you stay here, see, if you don't advance beyond this, you keep yourself trapped. And there is still the shadow of separation. And that's the difference between daylight and darkness. Within this, the great wonder, see, is not yet exposed. Because I am still, see, looking out. They talk about shattering the mirror, see. But again, we'll see how Bodhidharma deals with this in different issues. See, but to see this, see, now he says, bring me your mind. Where is Bodhidharma sitting? In the center of this great mind. Where does Weka, who eventually meets Bodhidharma, where? The only place that you can meet, see, in this profound state of samadhi. But at this point he's here, well, I can't grab it. He said, if you can't grab it, if you can't show it to me, are you paying close attention? Yeah? There, it's at ease. Don't move. It's at ease. See? Mumon's comment, that broken-toothed old Hindu, I'm wondering, is that racist? That broken-toothed old Hindu came so importantly posturing, see, thousands of miles over the sea. This was raising waves where there was no wind. In his last years, he induced enlightenment in his disciple, who, to make matters worse, was defective in the six roots. Why Shansanro did not know four ideograms. See, and this Shasanro, this was a Dharma brother of Mumon's. And he didn't start, he was supposedly an illiterate fisherman. See, and he didn't start practice till he was in his 30s. But see, he became symbolic of what the Zen student should be, what a Zen practitioner should be. No knowing, no intellectual knowledge. See, just in this absolute state. And this is Mumon praising him. See, and we look in terms of, we can look at Weka and see that supposedly his arm was cut off. I heard, I think it was Cleary when he was visiting, said that he may have been missing a limb, although Zen uses it as an example of commitment, that you really literally will throw your bodies away. But Cleary seemed to feel that someplace or another in the literature he'd found that bandits had maybe cut his arm off at the elbow, see. But Zen will use everything, see. That's his deep commitment. He stood in the snow. See, I didn't go into all of that, see. Mumon's verse, coming east, directly pointing. What's the meaning of Bodhidharma coming from the west? Directly pointing. By the way, this is a koan that you have to ask. You have to give a living answer to this koan. See? He said, you entrusted the Dharma. See, here he comes, coming east, directly pointing. You entrusted the Dharma. And trouble arose. See? The clamor of the monasteries is all about you. Is all because of you. See, all of this rushing around to do. See, and again, trying to do something. See, you don't have to do this. See, well, we've got to have this ritual this way and that way. And make no mistake about it. The ritual is absolutely essential. This is the template, the raft that we hold to. This gives us the foundation, the footing, see, that's necessary to transcend, to cross over, see, the realm of samsara. Bodhidharma said, Those who pacify mind like this do wall gazing. See, those who develop practice like this do the four practices. Those who accord with beings like this prevent slander and dislike. Bodhidharma taught that there are many roads for entering the path, but in essence, they do not go beyond two kinds. One is entering through inner truth, and the other is entering through practice. See, and what he's giving you here is a total picture of what your life of practice is about. See, entering through inner truth, see, and through the four practices. See, we'll look at this. Now, Bodhidharma said, pacifying the mind like this, which we've talked, is doing wall gazing. Now, people misunderstand who have never sat in a state of deep samadhi in Shikantaza. They say that he sat in a wall, in a cave and looking at a wall. Or we'd say in here, he sat there and stared at the wall. See, wall gazing. What is wall gazing? This is wall gazing. See, this amazing wall. See, never allow your attention, see, to wander or deviate from this amazing wall. This is wall gazing, a state of deep samadhi. How else could I say this? Mirror samadhi. See, wall gazing. Never leave the state of wall gazing. See, slowly deepen the practice, see, until we move beyond the sense of self doing wall gazing to where you simply become wall gazing. Now we said entering through inner truth, entering through inner truth means using the teaching to awaken to the source. See, use the inner truth means using the teachings to awaken to the source. It means, now here he's giving an explanation. This is using the inner truth. That means deep belief that living beings, both ordinary and sage, share just one and the same reality nature. See, to start with, as you sit down on this cushion, you are no different from a Buddha. Only difference. A Buddha is a sentient being, and they say it over and over and over in every one of the sutras. A Buddha is a sentient being who never leaves samadhi. They'll say, never leave samadhi 24 hours a day in this state of non-distracted awareness. That is my experience. Whatever limited contribution I have made, samadhi is a state of non-distracted awareness. Don't make it some difficult conceptual construct. See, it's to be here, wall-gazing, non-thinking, simply looking out. And don't stop with just that simple realization. See, because that doesn't contain the absolute wonder. Bodhidharma will talk on that. So long as I stop here, that's what Toray said. You conceptualize, you turn this into an understanding of be here now. And Buddha said, if even the shadow of an eyelash rests there, it's the separation between daylight and darkness. It means deep belief that beings, both ordinary and sage, share one and the same reality nature, and it is because of the false covering of alien dust that it is not manifest. Okay, these are words the scholars use who don't actually see the practice. What it means is that if you're sitting there right now, talking to yourself, judging yourself, or caught in the awareness, just this awareness of I'm here and I'm seeing this, that awareness of me seeing this. Yes, I can say, this is wall gazing. See, and I sustain this. I sustain this. But you understand that that sense of awareness of me looking out here is an illusion. It is a projection. This out here is your mind. See, this sense of awareness which you conceptualize, see, that's the cloud covering this most wonderful thing. This is why entropy, low entropy, means you're not up here judging, thinking. See, deep samadhi, non-distracted awareness. See, I'm not, see, conscious of this separation. You have to enter into the world of oneness. That's what's here. Modern neuroscience knows it. See, the physicist can figure it out with algorithms, that it is all just one thing. See? If you abandon the false and return to the real, abandon the false, quiet. Don't pick and choose. No critical, judgmental mind. As I look out here, see, I do not judge it. What will come up for you instantly, how will I know? I have to judge the good from the bad. That is delusion. That clouds everything over, and with that one thought, you no longer see this most amazing thing. See, trust it. Keep stepping out here, trusting it. You will always know what's appropriate. Roshi, this was his deep appreciation for Yasutani, the precision of his discrimination. Oh, but I don't, the precision of his discrimination. So I look here, this needs to be raised up. This needs to be pushed down. I'm not caught in the good or the bad. And if you can do that, a new world opens up to you. If you abandon the false and return to the real, concentrate your attention and gaze like a wall. See, here again is where the people, when they don't get what he means by wall gazing, concentrate, focus, bring your attention to here. Now gaze like a wall. You see the difference. See, when they start to intellectually talk about it, they don't see it. It isn't him sitting facing a rock wall or sitting facing this wall. Gather your concentration. Lower your entropy. See? And then gaze. See, then keep it focused. Keep it focused. If you see this much, you see the opening to the path. Do not allow that to slip away. Do not go back in to the churning mind. See? Stay awake. Stay awake. Said, if you gaze like a wall, then there is no self and there is no other. Ordinary and sage are equal. You can't conceptualize this. If you keep in your mind judging it, yes or no, good or bad, I like this, I don't like that. Well, how does that work? I want to understand it. There is the separation, and that's the difference between enlightenment and delusion. Suffering or bliss. And you will never know the power of it. But to the extent that you make an effort, you will get to share in that. You will never be cheated by the practice. Firmly abiding and unmoving. This is pacifying. Firmly abiding and unmoving, you will no longer fall into the verbal teachings. He said, this is called entering through inner truth. This is Shikantaza. See? And Roshi considered Shikantaza the final and most difficult koan. Become one with your koan, he would say. See? And that's a very difficult thing. And for the people who practice, see, if it's just conceptualizing, it doesn't bring about the amazing transformation. Now, entering through practice Entering through practice refers to the four practices. All other practices, see, are contained within these. Now, he's given you how to sit. Sitting practice. Working on the inner. Now he's going to tell you how to function. See, in a day-to-day basis. All other practices are contained within these. And what are these four practices? First, the practice of repaying wrongs. Second, the practice of going along with causal nexus. And third, the practice of not seeking anything. And fourth, the practice of according with the Dharma. This, see, is how we practice throughout the day. Maizumi Roshi, in his genius, he would say, act as if you're enlightened. See, and what is the practice then of repaying our wrongs? When you receive suffering, we should think to ourselves. When we receive suffering, we should think to ourselves. During countless ages past, I have abandoned the root and pursue the branches, flowing into the various states of being. See, now he's talking and he sees at a very profound level. See, but again, to simplify it, who you are, where you are, as you are, that's your karma. You can't deny your karma. I can pretend that I'm 17, but I'm 77. If I decide to jump up and run out back and turn some cartwheels into a round off and into a twisting back flip, which I used to be able to do, do you know what will happen to me? I'll plant my head in the concrete. See? You can't, see, deny your karma. Who you are, where you are, as you are. See? Oh, that's so depressing. He's telling you now how to work with where you are. During countless ages in the past, I have been ignorant of all of this. Now, let me just put a footnote in here. There are those who say that we sort of, from one incarnation to the next, we sort of select our own paths. I have no recall of me sitting down ever and deciding how to screw myself up this time. Have no recall on it, see. But I can see certain kinds of things, and I can see the merit of a true teaching. I have caused, say this to yourself, I have caused much harm and suffering, and it's the result of evil deeds that have ripened. See, and he said you should willingly endure the suffering without anger or complaint. This is the tough part. And the sixth patriarch talks about this. And the sixth patriarch actually gives instructions to teachers. And he said all of a sudden teachers, particularly teachers who have an open eye, will begin to suffer all sorts of misfortune, being attacked. See, and Dogen said somehow or another, when we review history, teachers with an open eye always seem to have come under attack. See, the sixth patriarch said it's because at that state, the teacher's burning karma. And how the teacher works with that becomes of critical importance. And right here is the way we work with it. See? You should willingly endure the suffering without anger or complaint. When this attitude towards suffering is born, with accepting where I am as I am. And you'll see, this isn't just, I say, all of the other teachings support this. They all are basically one teaching to support, to wrap around yourself, to help you negotiate, see, the realm of samsara. When this attitude towards suffering is born, you are in accord with the inner truth. And even as you experience wrongs, see, you advance on the path. Even as you experience wrongs. And he said, even if you're doing good today and you're having all of this misfortune come to you, see, how do I accept it? But I don't accept it with complaints or with angry criticisms of others. I accept it. And that's what the sixth patriarch said. And if you can see this, the inner truth, how is this inner truth? It's like this. And if I project out criticisms, anger, what am I distorting? This. See, if I simply accept it and say to myself, this can be enough, I accept these sufferings. Roshi used to tell me, Nyogen, accept all suffering, see, for all of the sakes of human beings. Even ask for more. Take away the suffering of all sentient beings and visit them on me. See, don't try to push away. That's the secret. To be, see, in accord, see, with the inner truth. This is the inner truth. What comes up, I simply take care of. Slanderous words come to me. See, I simply repent of the past misdeeds that have brought this around. And for me, this is not such a hard thing to see. Because some of you, you know, certainly you've worked from these holy places. I have lots of misdeeds that I have to still atone for, see? This is called the practice, see, of repaying wrongs. Now, the second is the practice of going along with the causal nexus. See, the place where this all occurs. Sentient beings have no selves. See, the six senses, this is an illusion. See, this is an illusion. This is Tom Campbell's program. See, we are programmed, see, to see separation. We are programmed to experience this in the way that we see it. And we all see it with enough accuracy that we can walk across the room and pick up a cup, or we can identify a flower as yellow or red. See? But we really don't know the inner truth of it. We don't know the content. We don't know the emotional value. See, because that's what we keep trapped in these six senses. So long as, see, I say, go get that red flower, and Mitsuin jumps up and gets it, it's accurate, he may be thinking, God, I hate this ugly thing. It looks like blood. Why? There's thorns on it. What is that crazy old monk asking me to do that? I think it's beautiful. The fragrance is hypnotic. Why is he bitching and moaning about what I've asked him to do? Why doesn't he appreciate? Do you see the turmoil? But if he's empty, if he isn't judging, and if I am not judging, we enter into the world of oneness. See, who speaks? Who listens? You're the only one interpreting this talk. He picks it up, twirls it in his hands, Mahakashyapa smiles. This is the world of oneness. Now don't those of you who are clever try to conceptualize that, because it comes out false. It's easy to stick a pin into that. See, that's where the old masters test. See, but can you see? If you are in this state of samadhi as a wall gazer, and we're all gazing, we now have left, see, this limited little world of ego, and we have entered into this most amazing mandala, and you will not be cheated. If we get good rewards, glory and fame and the like, this is brought about by past causes. It's also true for the negative. Past causes. Well, why? Why? When Roshi said that on one occasion, never ask the question why, and you've heard me say it over and again, and it was, my first question was why? See, it never ends. And, see, this is one of the reasons where some of psychology actually fails. Because you cannot correct, see, what happened to you when you were five. Well, you can understand it, but you know, that understanding is part of the problem. Drop the understanding, drop the conceptualizing mind, because understanding is what? It's clouding this over. Come into this state of samadhi. Can you see this? Yeah, see, no understanding here. This is quite remarkable. If you can do this, see? We receive them now. see, good or bad, we receive them now. But when the causal nexus, see, is ended, see, they will not be there. How can we rejoice? See, mind, this mind, is neither augmented or diminished by good or bad. See, but here in the limited egocentric mind of the sixth sense, I can suffer. But this is how it is. And if I can enter into the wall gazing, lower entropy, see, I begin to change this. I begin to transform this from a place of suffering, see, to, if I want to use Bruce Lipton, to a Garden of Eden, Buddha Dharma, the Buddha field, see. Or like Roshi would say, I want you to cover the ground where you stand. And it's important how you adorn the body of the Buddha. See, Mitsuan caught what I was saying Thursday night about cleanliness. See, has nothing to do with where you live or what you have. Cleanliness, purity. See, this, see, how I take care of this. See, and if you can take care of it in a deep state of samadhi, it is healing. That's the story I have told over and over and over on Maizumi Roshi going into the psychiatric facility. See, in this deep state of samadhi, it is healing for everything in the mandala. Mind is neither augmented nor diminished. If the wind of joy at gain and sorrow at loss does not stir, see, you deeply accord with the path. Don't make the mistake of thinking you have to reject anything. You reject causing harm. For some, you will have, see, good fortune come into your life. For some others, not so good. It doesn't matter. See, this Buddha mind, see, the doodads, the ornaments on the Christmas tree are irrelevant if you can wake up, see, and you enter into this most amazing thing. He said, if these winds, see, of attachments to gain and sorrow do not stir, then you're in accord with the path. Third, the practice of not seeking anything. See, the practice of not seeking anything. Worldly people are always deluded, craving everything, becoming attached everywhere. Do you see how they're coming along here? Wall gazing. See, repaying wrongs. Don't bitch and moan about where you are. Take care of waking up here, where you are as you are. See, there's nothing you can do about it. I'm 77 years old. My eyes aren't as good as they once were. There's nothing I can do. But there's always something I can do. I can take care of my health. I can go to see the eye doctor to see if he can help with the eyes. And if he can't, I accept the fact that I'm growing old. See, and I'll get jar lids or whatever it takes. I will work in the garden. See, I will take care of my practice. See, I will not get into a fantasy. What would I do if I was 17? I will never be 17. You can't even prove that I was 17. You just accept a fact here and now. Maybe true, maybe not. I might have jumped 17. I might have been 16 and 18. You don't know. See? Worldly people are always deluded, craving. Do you know the craving? I can remember when I'd hear this. See, and it would make me feel nutty. See, because I kept thinking, well, yes, I've got everything here, but I don't have a house in the Malibu Mountains overlooking the ocean. I don't have a Bentley parked or a Ferrari. See, you can't say it's perfect. See, but that's from a delusional standpoint, from high entropy. We keep thinking that those things will make a profound difference. But look around very carefully, and you will never be any place but where you are. This is the magic of Buddha Dharma, wherever you are. Now see, again, in the realm of Buddha Dharma, if you want a Bentley and a house overlooking Malibu, nobody stops you from going toward those things. The problem is, once you get them, much like Ryozen in his Lexus, when you drive it off, or when you drive it into that Bentley, into the garage, into the Malibu Mountains, you might think, damn, I'm still unhappy. See? All who seek suffer. If there is no seeking, listen, this is so, if there is no seeking, only then is there bliss. Thus we know that not seeking anything is truly a practice of the path. Practice, and the fourth of the practices is according with the Dharma. The Dharma, the teaching of reality, is based on the inner truth of the inherent purity of all things. Inherent purity. See, they can say, it's all empty. What are you sticking to? It's all changing. Changing by what? How I maintain. See, this wall gazing. How I maintain it, see, is through the practice of the paramitas. See, in the practice of the paramitas, see, your generosity, discipline, patience, effort, meditation, and wisdom. See, to practice the six perfections, this is how you go about your daily life. You cultivate a deep state of samadhi. You don't get caught into the picking and choosing. You work where you are, as you are, to stay awake. When the negative thoughts flow through, you release them. If they are continuous, you use the positive affirmation. See, I release all negative thoughts. I love myself. I am a Buddha. You are a Buddha. Do you know what that means? See, and the meaning, you have to be able to experience. What's the meaning of Bodhidharma coming from the West? If you can't answer that, see, then you will never enter into the great bliss. All of us, see, have that, see, as a guarantee as to what our innate nature is. He says, the body of the Dharma is not stingy with the physical body and life. See, it's not stingy. Don't worry. See, I can remember my one friend said, oh God, I could never give up. He was a writer. I don't know if writers are all like that. I could never give up beautiful women in a house in the hills. And this is true. You've heard me say. And with John, I started to laugh at the time. I said, John, you're a natural for Buddha Dharma. You are never, and I knew it, and he was talented. You are never going to have beautiful women, and you are never going to have a house in the hills. Now, see, but he did end up with a lovely wife, and in his eyes she was beautiful, and he lived in a little apartment up in Beechwood Canyon. So he still made it, but he had this fantasy. He's dead now, died a year ago, see? He had this fantasy about starlets, and see, no, come down here. I can't practice because I have to have those things. No, you won't appreciate what you have until you practice. The body of the Dharma is not stingy with the physical body and life. See, you will have what is yours. See, you are never cheated out of anything. Samsara cheats you of the most amazing experience. See, the reality of the eternal you. He said, this is practicing giving. Let there be no stinginess or holding back in the heart. This is benefiting oneself and also being able to benefit others and being able to adorn the path of enlightenment. To practice the six perfections, to remove false thinking, and yet to have nothing that is practiced. This is the practice of according with the Dharma. This is called the middle path.